Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since Monday, and you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I talked to Chenny, CEO of Find Your Flex Group, which is all about real flexible working and well-being, and she's also an AI researcher. We'll be discussing AI and flexible working. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. Chenny, tell us a bit about, before you got involved in where you are now, talk to us a bit about your background and, you know, how you did get into it.
I got into it because of my kids, I'll be honest. Prior to that, I was London bound, the usual Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, in and out on the train. So very much, you know, the kind of life that we all just assume that work is. And then in 2014, I had my first child, Beatrice, and she was born with hip dysplasia, which basically meant that she was in a full body cast until she was 15 months old, from the age of about 6 weeks old. My husband was amazing. We'd already decided that I was going to go back to work after 5 months, and he was going to take shared parental leave. So he was the first person in his company to do that. So I was off for 5 months with her. He was off for 8 months with her. But he suffered because obviously we were housebound, because B was in a full body cast. She couldn't have any of the childhood inoculations, and we didn't want to subject her to too much stuff while she was in the full cast. So we were kind of housebound. It was like our own personal private COVID, way before COVID. And my husband started suffering from depression with it. We both spoke to our respective employers and just said, look, Liam needs some kind of work time. He needs to be out with adults and just be out of the home situation. So his employer allowed him to go back 1 day a week. My employer allowed me to go down to 4 days a week, but he still continued to pay me 5 days because he didn't want us to lose out financially on
That's
top of
nice.
Everything else we've
That's
gone
really
through.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really cool. So we had a really positive experience, I guess, of our very first iteration of flexible working. However, 2 years later, when I had my second child Eliza, I had the conversation with my boss, where he'd obviously proven already that I could work flexibly, still manage all my KPIs, etc., and he wasn't interested. And this time it's because I had two healthy children, not an ill one, so I was going to be setting a precedent in an office that was 95% female. So the answer changed. I wasn't allowed to do flexible working. I was about 5 months into my maternity leave. Obviously we'd saved to be off for that year. And I just decided, you know what, enough is enough. The world needs to change. I'm going to set up mummy jobs and daddy jobs and go out and educate employers that just because somebody has a child doesn't mean that they've lost their ambition, that a woman hasn't lost her ambition. So our original sites were all like black and gold. They were not mumsy at all. Like I say, and because my husband had taken parental leave, he was like, well, we need a daddy jobs. And we kind of started there. And that was our first iteration into flexible working and being an advocate for it, was setting up those two job boards. After that, we went viral. We had 1.27 million people get in touch with us over 10 days asking, I'm not a parent, can I still apply for the jobs on your platform? And that really gave us pause, because this is well before COVID. This was back in 2017. And it made us really look out, because obviously myself and Liam had set mummy and daddy jobs up because of our own personal circumstance. But we just realized that actually there was a societal shift going on well before COVID. And people didn't want to just work. They wanted to have that work-life balance. So we went away and we came up with Find Your Flex and came back to market with that. And then really the rest from there has been history. I've been involved in all party parliamentary groups on future of work, modern employment, and really just advocated in as many places as possible for a new form of flexibility.
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. So you've gone through a lot to get to where you are, basically, you know.
It's been a journey.
Absolutely. How has the way we think about work changed since the pandemic, and what does working well really mean in 2025 and beyond?
So for me, this has been the biggest shift, because I think we've gone from valuing presenteeism, certainly as employees, to questioning our purpose. And I think that's really come into play with work. So why am I doing this? What am I achieving? I get so many women in particular who sort of hit my age and start going through perimenopause, and we start thinking about, why are we working? I want to do something that, you know, sings to my soul, I think was the best thing I heard when I was talking to somebody about why they were questioning their purpose and what they wanted to do as they moved forward. And it's, I don't know if there's if it's just because we have a natural break in our career progression around then. We've maybe peaked wherever we're at and we're starting to reevaluate actually what makes us happy. We've made our money. We're on the property ladder. And this is certainly true, I think, of millennials. I think the younger generations will have it a little bit differently. But certainly by about our age, we're kind of in that position where we're either about to start having a family or we're kind of settled in our lives and actually we're looking for something that, like I say, sings to our soul. So I think that's a big shift. I think with employers, there's obviously a big shift at the minute for some employers. I think employers that are linked to the States in some way or other that are still valuing presence over purpose. But I think for us now, working well just means in ways that protect our mental health, ways that offer flexibility and focus on meaningful outcomes, not just the hours that we log every day at work.
Absolutely, yeah. So was you going to say something there again?
Yeah, I was just going to say, sorry. I think all I was just going to sort of end that question with is I think we've got to the point where people want autonomy, they want trust, they want roles that support their lives, not define it. And I think that's kind of where we are as employees. I think I'd question whether employers have caught up with that. And I think with the stuff that's going on in the States at the minute, there's obviously the right wing in this country that are trying to do that trickle back, put women back in their boxes and all of that kind of stuff that's going on at the minute, the rhetoric coming out from Nigel Farage and reform and the uplift that we've seen, especially I'm up in the Northeast. So we've obviously seen them take control over a few councils over the last week. So I think, I think what people want deep down when it comes to work, whether or not we get that, we're going to have to fight for it. That's what I was going to end with there.
No, of course. Yeah. I think on both sides, there's strains on, the workplace and there's a strain on the person themselves. And it's quite challenging, isn't it, to get that happy medium as well in terms of where both sides can reach an agreement sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we were going to talk about outcome-based working later on, but I think that's one of the biggest things that we'll need to change as we move forward, certainly as AI comes into the picture with work. I think people will find it a lot less stressful working to clearly defined outcomes than they do working to a job description where in the last poll, I think we got 90% of our audience, the job they do, 90% of it does not match the job description that they applied for and that they're being paid for. So I think reworking out what is the purpose of this role, what is the outcome that needs to come from this role, and working it back from that to actually design the role with actual real thought and insight and looking at how AI can augment what we do, I think will make life a lot easier in the workplace.
I keep seeing off social media and stuff, and I don't know how true this is, obviously, but and you know what social media is like. It can sometimes be quite intense. And I keep seeing stuff like, generally people are saying that AI will take over jobs at certain points. And I'm sure I'm not alone. I'm sure people have seen it generally. What did you think about that?
Well, it's a big marketing tack, isn't it, to embody fear into the masses, keeps us in our boxes, and it makes us... It's good that, to me, fear with AI is going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you fear it, you're not going to learn it. You're not going to realize how much it can help you in your role, which is going to end up putting you out of a job because you're not going to adopt it. So it comes full cycle if we fear things that we don't understand. There's a lot of tools. There's a lot of articles, videos, blogs out there now about how AI can really help you. I think most organizations will look at implementing AI to augment the talent that they've got. There's always going to be organizations that will use AI to cost cut. It's the nature of the beast. There will be bad organizations, bad employers that do it. But I think those who you'll want to work for will be those who use AI and adopt it ethically and who will use it to augment the roles they've got. At the end of the day, if you want the actual statistics, about 50% of every single job that we have or do is process-based. If a job is process-based, it can and will be automated at some point. So if you think about the menial admin parts of our jobs that we probably don't enjoy doing and actually stops us doing the bits that we enjoy doing, that's the bit that can be automated. That's the bit where AI can really help us. Where we need to pick ourselves up and do our own learning around all this is convincing our employers not to just get rid of the 50% of our job and make it a part-time role, or if there's two people doing that job now, not reducing that to one headcount. What we need to show employers that actually, if you take that bit and automate it, the 50% of our time you're giving us back, actually we can use our innovation, our creativity, our critical thinking, our emotional intelligence, all these things that AI don't have, and actually do something with that role and create outcomes for that business that is much more innovative than AI could do alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, that makes a lot of sense. What are the biggest risks you see for employee well-being right now, particularly around burnout, stress and overwork?
The biggest thing is overload from blurred work-life boundaries, especially within hybrid roles. People have still not got used to switching off when they're working from home. My mum, when back in COVID, she was a social worker in child protection. So obviously she had to work right throughout COVID. She found it really tough to work from home and be able to switch off at the end of the day. And I used to say to her, you're working with a laptop, you've got a bag by the end. You need to do that physical thing at the end of the day of shutting your laptop, putting it in your bag, shutting that bag and putting it somewhere. And that's your work done. And then go out for a walk. I think when we worked in London, we always had that hour decompressed, didn't we, on the train back out. So you could listen to your audio, but you could decompress from the stuff that was going on there. So we didn't take our work home from us. So we just need to put things like that in place to really help us switch off. I also think a lack of clear outcomes leads to an always-on culture and presenteeism, especially digitally, where we're available on WhatsApp, Teams and all the things. So remembering to put your apps and your notifications on silent after a certain time of day, just so you can switch off that part of your brain. A lot of mobile phones have two SIM cards now as well, so you could have your personal one and a business one and differentiate kind of what you're looking at different hours of the day. I think that can really help. And I think, as we've kind of already touched on, the pressure to learn AI tools but without strategic support, that really adds to your cognitive load. I think that creates uncertainty in itself. So making sure you take time out to learn AI tools and the ramifications of them and kind of what you think would work well in your own. And, you know, you can go on and ask ChatGPT, you can ask Google what kind of AI tools, this is my role, upload your job description, say what kind of tools do you think would help me, and then learning about them. There's so many free courses out there now. We just need to take the fear out of it, because I think anything that we don't understand is always going to add to burnout, stress, overwork. So it's just really switching back on that education bit in our brains, where actually it's exciting to learn something new, because it was always exciting when we were at school and we seem to lose that when we leave school and enter workplace. So I think switching that vitality, that learning something new, that doing something different again, can make work exciting, even if you're in, you know, something that you feel is like quite boring and process based. Actually learning a new technology that's going to help you do things faster or more efficiently is actually quite exciting.
Mm, no, absolutely. Absolutely. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Chidi, thank you for that information around, you know, your past and what you've been doing, and also giving us an idea around a bit about AI in the workplace. There's a lot of fear around AI replacing human jobs. And I know we've mentioned it before, but I suppose focusing a bit more into it, what's your view on how AI is impacting the future of work and employee mental health?
So as I said before, AI is not replacing jobs, it's replacing tasks. So a lot of our day-to-day work is very much process, admin based, and that kind of will be automated. I think the problem is coming from the lack of communication, because as we all know, that breeds anxiety. The fear itself stems from the media, it stems from poor workforce planning. And when AI is used without transparency, it does threaten safety and trust. And I think those are core principles in all of us that help us feel calm and actually make us want to learn and want to do things differently. I think used well, AI can relieve that overload, and it can help humans, us, go for those higher value, emotionally intelligent work that that sparks our creativity. I think, I mean, I touched on it earlier about women of my age, sort of 40 plus, that are wanting roles that sing to our souls. And I think if we can make work fun again and make it so we wake up in the morning and want to do it, I think that's a good thing. So although we might worry about AI replacing jobs, I think for me, AI really is just going to make work a little bit more fun again and allow us to be a little bit more creative and innovative in what we do.
I mean, AI, I was hoping that it should make people's work easier, if that makes sense, because of, it's almost like you've got like a consultant, someone to kind of, because I use it loads now, but if I need to know something, I'm sure we all do, or people that are aware of it, you can kind of just ask it more or less anything about anything, maybe, and obviously you might need to get more specialist advice, but it gives you, you know, some kind of understanding over something you're trying to maybe query, whatever that might be.
No, it does. But I think there's the side of it that people worry that actually it's going to stop us from learning. If the information's already there, it's going to stop us from learning anything new. So we might be able to read about it, but actually we still, the AI like ChatGPT still needs human oversight. You still need to be able to go out and fact check the information that it's giving you.
Absolutely.
And I think the concern for many with AI is that actually it turns off people's brains, because actually it's just going to be getting done for us. So you can ask it to write your CV. You can ask it to give you a recipe. You can ask it to, you know, fill in a form to send off to reporters and get interviews in front of people. So, you know, I think that, I mean, and that's the same in sort of, I work a lot in the HR and the recruitment space, and we were talking today that there's a lot of candidates now that are almost have fake CVs, and that they can make out on their CVs that they're all singing, all dancing, but actually you get face to face with them and start interviewing them for a role, and actually the knowledge isn't there, because ChatGPT or whatever AI technology that they've used to adapt something is not telling the whole truth, but filling in the cracks. I find that quite interesting in terms of how it will be adopted. But it is fun, but you do have to have that oversight on it to make sure that it's not spouting out a lot of nonsense.
Have you had colleagues talk to you about AI and their thoughts in it and their perspectives?
Yes, and obviously in my role, I get to speak to lots of different organisations as well. I mean, you were talking earlier about the fear factor. There are a lot of people, certainly in HR, in councils, in the public sector, that are really fearful of it, and they do fear that it's going to take jobs away or they'll lose their jobs. I think for me, it's in those kind of roles, I think you have to look for how it can augment your role rather than just be used as a cost-cutting exercise. We need to figure out how do we make our roles more strategic, certainly in the HR space, because I think a lot of people who work within HR, they're continuously firefighting. It's very, very much admin, legal-based, and a lot of that can probably be automated now. So it's about how do we bring the human element more into our roles so those are the areas that actually add real value. So there is fear out there, but I think as long as there's people like myself, like yourself, that are trying to educate people in terms of how AI can be used, and as long as we don't work for one of those employers that will use it as a cost-cutting exercise without any kind of augmentation or ethics involved in it, that will be interesting. Actually, on that note, there's quite a lot of legal stuff that will need to be fought over this kind of thing as well, because there's also the question around redundancy. If you are made redundant because of AI, whether or not it's legal to do that, because traditionally, if you're made redundant, it's because that role no longer exists in the organization, but the role will still exist. It's just being done by AI. So all of these things, because the government haven't ruled on them or have not legislated or set policy around it, a lot of this stuff will get fought in the courts about whether or not it's legal to do that and to lose your job from AI. So there's going to be a lot of interesting legislation and a lot of interesting legal precedent being settled in the courts over the next couple of years, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. In terms of businesses, I mean, creating workspaces where AI enhances human potential, is that available rather than threatening with it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there'll be two routes people go down. So treat AI as augmentation, not replacement. And we train the humans in our organization to manage AI and focus on what AI can't do. So judgment, empathy, nuance. There's got to be oversight of AI, and humans have to provide that oversight. It just means that our roles will change slightly. So the time that we spent administrating will now be spent overseeing, while still looking at how do we bring in creativity and innovation and critical thinking. I think businesses will also need to build in workforce AI governance into HR, and ensure that how we adopt AI is adopted with fairness, that everything is explained properly, and that we have that oversight, and that we involve employees in the AI rollouts as well, that we get them to test different AI tools and see what, you know, if you co-create the future, not impose it, you're going to have a much happier workforce. I think we've spent a lot of time over the last few years talking about diversity, inclusion. People have been talking about culture, values and behaviours in our organisations. This is going to be the ultimate test, because businesses will really need to look at how they adopt AI ethically to create or to maintain their culture, values and behaviours if it's a good workspace. Because if you start losing people whilst you're adopting AI and we start seeing people fall out of the workplace, that will have a knock-on impact in the organization. Morale will dip. You'll have more mental health issues by the people who remain in the workforce, who may have lost friends that have worked next to them for the last 20 years. So it's a really interesting time. It's a shame that the government haven't chosen to legislate around it. But I think good employers will remain good employers, and will implement it ethically. I think the bad employers out there that are all just about the bottom line, we've seen in recent years all of the big headlines of where a lot of people have been let go and things like that, that won't change. Those organisations are those organisations. They're still going to do that. Hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, no, of course. And I mean, thinking about it, and I do see your point, it sounds like AI is going to help. It will help, but it will need some level of oversight as well. I mean, I talking about, you know, I think there's some exaggeration about AI completely taking over, because there's certain roles where you just can't do it, especially with like healthcare, social care, where you need that human interaction to directly talk to about things, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is, with AI, it needs constant learning. It's like having an intern in your office. It doesn't come off the factory wall as standard and you plug it and off you go. It needs training. It is like having another employee. So we've got to train the AI anyway. So that, again, adds another question and dynamic around intellectual property. So how much, if you're a salesperson and you're training an AI bot to deliver sales, so much of what you're going to train it is product, but the other part of it is actually a little bit of your soul. It's your flair. It's what makes you a good salesperson. And actually, you've got the thought then, when you leave that organization, GDPR comes into play. Do you have the right to request that part of you is deleted? Do you want to retain my sales ability within that AI bot? And you can give me a retainer and I'll leave, but you're still going to pay me whilst you're using the AI that I've trained. So it actually brings in loads of different questions into play. And again, this comes back to us trying to educate ourselves about, actually, if I adopt AI and I train it to be me and I do leave, I can have this conversation with my employer about, you know, having some form of retainer and ongoing remuneration should I leave, if I'm the best salesperson on that team and I'm the one they've chosen to train my AI. So it can actually lead to lots of different opportunities as well, if you become specialist in a certain area and you train yourself to train AI. So again, it's the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see so many new jobs created that don't exist today. And that's quite exciting. You know, the UK is a very entrepreneurial country. We're made up of entrepreneurs. And I think it's just getting back that excitement for work and change. And it's very Darwinian, but, you know, that's kind of where we find ourselves at the minute.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, totally. You've talked about outcome-based working. How does this model help reduce burnout and create healthier, more sustainable careers?
So outcome-based models, it rewards when things get done, not how long it took. So it's about re-looking at how we monetize and how we engage with talent. For employees, it gives them ownership of how they deliver. It reduces micromanagement, which we know causes a lot of stress, and it increases trust. It allows for different workloads, dynamic workloads, if you will, and people can flex and focus based on their life needs and their energy cycles. I know that sounds a little bit hippy-dippy, but that's, you know, kind of where we're at. And I think for me, outcome-based working is about how we redesign the work of tomorrow. So the way I look at it, so you've got AI, automation, robots, computers, they all deliver outputs, yeah? Human beings deliver outcomes. So that's where we get our purpose and our drive from. What's what makes us get out of bed in the morning. It's what makes us happy about the work that we do every day. So for me, that's what outcome-based working, it sits hand in hand with AI, with automation, with the computers that we work with. That delivers the outputs, we deliver the outcomes. And that allows us to work on short project-based roles. I don't think we'll see just long-term PAYE. I think the way workforce planning and things like that is going to have to go within organizations, people will come in to work on specific projects for 6 months, 12 months, and I think that's how we'll work in the future. It still might be in a PAY environment. You might still have your business do your NI contribution, all of that kind of stuff. But I think we'll see, and as we did throughout COVID, a lot more people moving into that contractor space. I mean, there was a huge lift in women moving into the contractor space during COVID because of the flexibility, because of the work from home, because, you know, working the way they were just wasn't working for them anymore. I think we'll see that continue. And that again asks very interesting questions of Parliament in terms of how will we taxate if there's that flip and the majority of people become contractors versus PAYE employees, how are we going to fulfill the tax burden? And it might mean that actually some of their mates might actually have to get taxed properly and they start looking at how people are engaged with work because, like I said, they won't have these ongoing 20-year long jobs anymore. That, you know, they're going to be fast, they're going to be project based, and work will end up become, I think, more project management based, and it will be just stay in one role and you're still in it 20 years later, or you might have progressed 20 years later. But I can't see that being the future of work, in all honesty.
No, of course. What signs should people look out for to recognize when their work-life balance is off track, and how can they take back control?
So the warning signs are constant fatigue, lack of joy, irritability, or just feeling behind even after working late. Tricky for women of my age that are perimenopausal, because you'll feel that anyway. Yeah. I think those are the big sort of warning signs, that lack of enjoyment of a role that you maybe used to really enjoy. How you can get around it, track your outcomes, not your hours. If your effort isn't translating into value, something's not right. And we need to sort of look for, maybe going to our manager, our line manager, and ask for clarity around the role. Explore some outcome-based redesigns with your manager. Think about, what is the outcome that our organization needs for my job? Like, what bit is it that actually adds value to the business? Where's the dot, dot, dot back to the shareholder proposition? I think once we start looking at that, we can start asking our managers to help us redesign our role. So again, we get that enjoyment back. But yeah, constant fatigue, lack of joy, irritability, or just feeling constantly behind is probably a sign that your work-life balance is majorly off.
No, of course. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Jenny, how important is flexibility in maintaining good mental health at work? Has flexibility changed in the meaning over the last few years?
It has. So true flexibility is now about autonomy over time, location, and even your outputs. Time flexibility alone is no longer enough, I think, for a lot of people. People want control and they want freedom over their outcomes, certainly from the majority of people that I speak to. I think 2025 is all about our ability to deliver in a way that works for the individual, not just the business. So I do feel there's been that mindset shift within workers. not sure it's 100% there in employers. I tend to speak to a lot of employers about the future of work and kind of how it's going to look by the time we get to 2030. And you can see that they get it. They know that it's coming, but they just don't want to go down that road. I think it's quite frightening for them because it's a big change for employers. And you'll get those that will just go, yeah, wow, let's do it. They'll jump in with two feet. They'll get certain things wrong. There'll be those that take the medium view and they'll do it with ethics and they'll kind of do it slowly. And then there'll be the others who will either just be too late and they just won't be in the game. And unfortunately, those businesses will fold, or they'll just take their sweet time. And they might be in an industry where actually AI isn't prevalent straight away and that they can take their time and adjust with it. But I think realistically, this is something that has to change really quickly.
No, of course. I mean, how can people maybe improve their mental health in the workplace?
For me, I like to audit my week. I like to look at what's giving me energy, what's draining it. And then I look at, well, where are the bits that AI could help? And I'll go out and I'll research it, or I'll speak to colleagues and ask what tools they're using. I try to focus on the things that I can control, because I tend to find it's really difficult. If you're always focused on stuff that you can't control, you tend to just go down that rabbit hole. I've seen it with family and friends over what's going on in Gaza, the different wars that are going on around the world. If you're constantly plugged into social media and you end up in an echo chamber, you can't control any of that. So I think focusing on what you can control, where you can put your effort, where are your boundaries, and I think that overall helps towards your well-being. I think if you are in an environment where you've got uncertainty, because we know uncertainty fuels stress, information will reduce that. So I always suggest ask for clarity. I was always one of those kids. My parents always said to me, if you don't understand, stick your hand up in the air and get them to explain it again. And if you're not getting it the way that they're explaining it, ask them to show you a different way. I think that's kind of how we need to be right now. We're getting served so much information every day. I think, I read one stat somewhere that, you know, when we were younger, the amount of information we took in a day was like, what, 3 tabloid-sized papers. Whereas now, the amount of information that we get served every day is something like 80,000 newspapers worth of information. It's a lot of information. So just making sure that we focus on what we can control and to seek clarity, I think those are sort of the main areas.
Totally agree with you. Do you know what? Funny enough, a few months ago, I was actually thinking about that. I was actually thinking about when I was younger and how much information I used to process in a day, and even through studies and stuff. But now, it is a whole nother level. It's like, I feel like I'm having to reprogram my mind to take in more information compared to, you know, my teens and 20s. Do you know what I mean? Just to keep up with the world and the new developments. And because it's just, and that's why I love AI in a way, because it helps. I can just ask things if I just need to know something briefly or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But yeah. It's just quite, I mean, do you find the same thing or?
Oh, God, yeah. I think I had to come off social media for a while. And I think the way social media works as well, I don't know if everybody is aware of this or if they're looking at themselves. If you like certain things, you'll get served more of it. So you end up in an echo chamber, and that can become really unhealthy because it's not asking you to look outside of what you know. You're just getting fed the same, and it could be nonsense. Like, look at the amount of fake news that's out there. Look at all of the really horrid rhetoric that comes out of Trump and people like that around the world. And if you've seen something like that and you've reacted to it in any way, you're just going to get served more of it all of the time. So finding that way to get out of these echo chambers and to have diverse thoughts on things and to go out and research the things that we're getting served, I think that is so important for our well-being. And just, and sometimes just switching off, like having a break from social media completely, actually go and pick up a newspaper or just go out with your friends. I mean, I've started netball in the last couple of years, and I just make sure I go out and play netball a couple of times a week. I think we need things in our lives that just take us away from the stuff that feeds us all the time, you know.
No, absolutely. No, I'm totally with you on that. It's it's become, while social media is, you know, there's some really interesting things as well, it can be too much. Mm-hmm. And you're right, because algorithms, so when you look for, if you search something, whether that's YouTube or Instagram or whatever it might be, then what happens is it starts putting out all that stuff you're interested in, and then you're like, oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. And then look at that. And I'm like, in the evening, I must get caught up for maybe an hour. That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time in my world. Yeah. Because I see this come up and that come up. I'm like, oh, gosh, that's really interesting. And yeah. YouTube, same thing with YouTube. And it's like, and that sometimes it keeps me going for hours. It's which is not...
It's all set up for behavioural targeting as well. So if your Alexa hears you talking about something, or I'm absolutely adamant our phones listen to what we say, because I could be having a conversation with my husband and the next minute I'll start getting served ads about it, whether that's an ad on my TV or an ad while I'm streaming or an ad on my phone and I'm on Facebook or whatever it might be. Everything listens. Anything that you type in, it's tracking everything that you do. Every time you're allowing your cookies, it's letting all of the advertisers know who you are, what you think, and it just starts building these funnels around you.
No, absolutely. What role should leaders and HR teams be playing in helping their people work well, and what needs to shift?
So for me, HR needs to move from an administrative firefighting role to a strategic role within our organisations, where actually they're being proactive around everything. Our leaders need to champion outcome-based performance, not visibility-based metrics. It's not about presenteeism, it's about what we can deliver. And HR should embed well-being into the job design. It shouldn't be an afterthought. It shouldn't be a bolt-on with apps or yoga or all of these other fancy things that come in. It should be designed from the beginning. As we've already said, a lot of our roles, I think, 90% of people said the role that they do is not the role that they get paid to do. Job descriptions don't match. So HR have got a lot of stuff that they need to do to make sure that actually what's going on is healthy.
No, of course. For people feeling overwhelmed by change, AI, hybrid working, job security, what simple first steps would you recommend to regain balance?
So I know we've touched on this already. When you're overwhelmed, it's because you feel uncertain, and you feel like that uncertainty just creates a lot of stress. So for me, I think when you are feeling overwhelmed, just take a step back and give yourself a minute, you know, have a cup of tea, do whatever it is that makes you just give you that couple of minutes just to decompress a little bit, and then educate yourself. That's always what I suggest to people. We've got to ask for clarity. So whether that's going to your manager saying, I don't understand, or we go out and we do the research ourselves, we ask our AI tools, you know, I'm feeling overwhelmed because, and you'll actually be quite intrigued by how empathetic those answers can be. Certainly ChatGPT, my daughter, who was, I think, 9 at the time, she obviously didn't feel comfortable initially telling me about something, and she'd gone, she said, oh, can I use your ChatGPT? And she'd gone and used it. And I think one of her friends, she'd said it, how can my friend be my friend? Or is my friend still my friend if she's being mean to me at school? And actually I got to review all of the answers that ChatGPT had given her, and she'd carried on the dialogue a few times, like for a few minutes afterwards. And actually I was pleasantly surprised with the responses that they gave. They were actually really empathetic. And I think, you know, fear stops us doing an awful lot of things. But if we educate ourselves, that removes fear, because we've gone out and we've sought clarity. And I think that's what I would suggest to anybody that's feeling overwhelmed by the change, that, you know, and say, you know, I'm scared by this change. I'm scared what this is going to do to my job. But then follow that up with, so if this is my job, this is what I do on a day-to-day basis, how can I actually use this to help me in my role rather than me being fearful of it? That's a great way to ask a question of AI, and you know, it's an AI, it's a bot at the end of the day, it's got to give you the answer. So that's what it's been programmed to do.
Absolutely. And finally, what's your vision for healthiest, most human-centered workplaces of the future, and how can individuals and businesses start building that today?
So for me, the most human-centric and healthiest are going to be workplaces that are agile, that are outcome driven, and that are rooted in trust, because you have to have that trust there to have outcome based work. Human-centered does not mean anti-tech. It just means that the tech that we choose to use as an employer amplifies the humanity in our organization. And I think for all the businesses that want to start building this today, and individuals who are contractors or just want to start learning, I think you just have to start small. Redesign one role, pilot AI with ethics, co-create new ways of working with your teams. But yeah, we all, even when we go and do huge transformation projects with companies, we always start with one role. We show them how to do that redesign, and then we handhold all the way through. Just don't forget to stop learning. I think that's something that's crucial to all of us. We have such enjoyment in it. I love the fact that I see my kids come home from school every day, excited to tell me about something that new that they've learned. And that's amazing. And we forget that when we leave school. And I think it starts even in maybe senior school when the learning gets harder. And if we don't have that enjoyment and our teachers aren't fulfilling us or helping us learn in a way that really truly makes us understand, I think we start losing that. And I think that really comes across in the work and how we go out and face life. So I would just, you know, never lose that joy of learning. I love learning. And, you know, there's been times in my career where I've lost that love, that I've sat twiddling at my thumbs at a desk and thinking, that's it. I think that's kind of where we are.
Brilliant. If people wish to find you on social media or just get in contact about what you do, your services and just general advice, can anyone find you anywhere? You're on social media or...
I'm on LinkedIn, so Cheney Hamilton, so I'll be on LinkedIn there. The Find Your Flex group is on LinkedIn. Obviously, we have our websites, Mummy Jobs, Daddy Jobs, findyourflex.co.uk, which are the job boards, and the findyourflexgroup.com, which is the main website. But yeah, that would be the best place to find me.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for today. You have some really insightful information. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.